Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, August 26, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had a big reversal in gold today. It was up strong earlier, out of the gate this morning, it was up about 20 bucks. Had a little bit of reversal, currently looking at down a little over a dollar at $1,321. Silver's up 13 cents at 1873. Platinum is holding at 1076. A buck down for palladium at 691. Oh, just to recap on gold, we did have a high of 1343 was our high for the day. So, and now we're holding at 1321. So, and of course, it's all due to the Federal Reserve and Janet Yellen. And we'll talk about that here in just a few minutes, right after the market report. The USDX today, that also reversed. It was down like a 0.25. Earlier in the day, and now it's reversed. It's up 0.75 at 95.47. Crude oil looks like it's holding its own at 47.33. And the paper markets today, we also saw big reversals. It was up triple digits early in trade, and it is currently down 53 points, 18,300. And 95. The NASDAQ was up 6 at 52.18, and the S&P was down 3 at 21.69. So really no big, hey, the Dow is still 18.3, and the NASDAQ is still 5.2, and the S&P is 2.1. So nothing to get really excited about that either direction. 10-year yield, I think, was 1.64%, up 0.06, and pressure on the euro at 1.12. And again, European and Asian markets basically unchanged overnight. Just a few ticks up and down. So not so much there. But, of course, Al, the biggest news was, of course,
news is good news.
I don't know. That's
you
what
they
tell
us. Should start calling her Janet No News Yellen.
Yeah, what'd she say new?
All the new clues, Janet. Let me see where we are here. Yeah, all the new clues, Janet Yellen dropped about the next Fed hike.
Yeah.
That's the headline, Yahoo Finance.
Yeah.
Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen's spoke today at Kansas City Federal Reserve's Economic Policy Symposium at Jackson Hole, Wyoming. In her speech, Yellen presented... You have to make sure. Some people might not have heard. In her speech, Janet Yellen presented an optimistic view of the economy. Now, there's something new. Is that, this is really optimistic. This isn't like the talk about the recovery that was right around the corner for the past 8 years or so. It's this is real optimism. They're not faking it this time. However, she provided a few hints about the path of future rate hikes. Indeed, in light of the continued solid performance by the labor market. See, there's some debate about this. The continued solid performance of the labor market.
Some lies.
Well, there's a difference of opinion on that. I mean, Mr. Williams over at shadowstats.com, he thinks there's 23% unemployment. And Janet says there's less than 5% unemployment.
Who are you going to believe?
I don't know. It's...
Even if you go in between, it's far, you know, far more than what
I understand.
The Yellen is.
And when there's a continued solid performance of the labor market, well, I don't know. I have my doubts. And our outlook for economic activity and inflation, all right, which apparently she expects more active economic activity and more inflation. She says, I believe the case for an increase in federal fund rates has strengthened in recent months. Stressing that the economy, and she's stressing that the economy is now nearing the Fed's goal of maximum employment and price stability. Really? This is the maximum employment right now? Is that where we are? And we're going to have price stability? However, she did note that inflation remained weak, dampening the need to increase rates soon. So she says we should increase rates, but not soon. Right? Which is to say she said nothing here.
And basically, when this was initially, she spoke at 10 o'clock.
Yep.
Stock market went higher. Gold went higher. Everything went higher. And then another Fed, I can't remember which one it was the Fisher maybe. He comes out. He says, well, you know what? Maybe we can take the rate hike in September. As soon as September. That's next week. Or the end of the month when they actually meet again, but before an election. And she even stated in her speech that she didn't think it would be before the election.
Yeah.
But he comes out and says, no, you know, we got the stuff to go in September. And that's when everything reversed. You know, so it's like, okay.
I don't know what it is. Well, this is like Abbott and Costello or something like that. One of them is telling you maybe we're going to raise. The other one says, no, we're not. They can't even get their own story straight in a sense. You know, and it's like, you know, if there was any consensus up there of what's going on, they should have pretty much identical speeches. Now, that means we probably wouldn't need the second speaker, but the point is, if there were real consensus among the Federal Reserve gurus, they should all agree, okay, we are going to raise interest rates, or no, we're not going to raise interest rates. And the implication is that the Federal Reserve is still divided. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know when they're going to do it. And insofar as confidence is what they need to sell to keep everybody using those green pieces of paper we call currency.
You know, and that is an interesting point, because I remember Greenspan. You didn't hear all these comments coming from the various Fed chairmen. I mean, once in a while somebody would give an interview or something. And the same way really with Bernanke, they were a little bit more common because of just all the turmoil in the markets and so forth. But with Janet Yellen, I mean, they all are giving their opinion on what should happen, and so it's not. I'm not even so sure that it's, you know, they don't know what direction. It's that you've just got a bunch of people in there that can't agree with anything, and she's not leading them, and she's not saying. You know, she doesn't have the idea of her own to give that support or to give a leadership in the group of the Federal Reserve chairmen. So, you know.
But you're right about Greenspan. He did all the speaking. He was the front man.
I mean, no one understood what he said.
No, nobody understood what he said. Yet he just, the maestro.
But
the maestro, for God's sake. You know? But regardless, there were no contrary voices from within the Fed.
Mm-mm.
Now, I don't know. We're probably going to have opinions from the janitor.
You're everywhere.
The Federal Reserve janitor is probably going to, he's going to be on the internet probably this evening and say, wow, I think it should be. We should have raised the rates right now. Everybody's got an opinion, Melody.
But you know what? They think that she's got some, you know, that she's got some new news in the past couple of months, as though we're on a more positive path for our country economically. But however, the second of the GDP came out today, and the U.S. economy grew less than what was previously reported for the last quarter. No big surprises there. And a bigger depletion of inventories. The GDP, which is the value of all goods and services produced, rose at a 1.1% annualized rate. Now, this is down from the initial estimate of 1.2%. So obviously she didn't take this number into effect. She's only looking at inflation and unemployment. That's it. That's the only thing that matters to whether you're going to raise rates or not. Household spending, that was the biggest part of the economy. That was revised higher. And it was based on used car sales. And I'm thinking to myself, the biggest part of the economy was revised higher on used car sales? What happened to new car sales?
Yeah.
You know? The economy's failure to develop a sustained pickup has kept the Fed from pulling the trigger of higher rates. So the only real area of strength was consumer spending. This was from David Sloan, a senior economist at some place, Forecast Inc. in New York. He said that but the general view is that things are going to always be better in the next quarter. It's always going to be better, Al.
Yeah, I understand.
Things
that
are always going to be picking up. I don't know.
I understand. You know, at my age, I believe that when I was a teenager and in my 20s and even my 30s, next quarter would be even better. But you get to a point in life where maybe you think, I'm not so sure that next quarter is going to be all that hot. You have a little different perspective on that. I think, Janet, we saw this after her announcement last December that they were raising interest rates by 0.25%, and they caused the stock market, reacted by dropping several hundred points. I think she's gun-shy. I think she's afraid to say anything, and we've talked a little about this in the past. She's not going to say yes. She's not going to say no, not too strong, not too weak. It's kind of like the Goldilocks things. It's not too hot, not too cold. Right, just right. That's what she's trying to do, and she's afraid to say something. What if she comes up with another 0.25% and the stock market falls by 500 points? I think she's
big
afraid
deal.
To say that.
We're not even at 17,000. I mean, what difference does it
make?
But I mean, really, 0.25%. So what if it drops at that? What if it drops 2,000 points? We're at 18,000, for heaven's sakes. You know, so, you know, I mean, there's other things that are tied to it. The bonds will go nuts, you know, and I think that's where the main problem lies, is in the bond structure, in the bond bubble. And that's what they're trying to avoid, but they can't. They're between a rock and a hard place. And so, you know, to me, this is what your rate should be based on as far as our economy, as far as the GDP. You had, there was some numbers here that I just wanted to, before tax earnings, companies decreased 1.2% after rising 3.4% in the first 3 months. But yet they come out and say, we had such an awful first quarter, but yet the company still decreased.
But it wasn't as bad as the next quarter or the third
quarter. You had profits that fell 4.9% from a year earlier. So, again, it doesn't – when you look at this type of a report, and yet they still get to revise it one more time for the final numbers, it doesn't wash with the number of jobs that they say they have created. So, you know, the numbers just aren't meshing together.
Yeah,
you know, they just don't make sense. Government spending fell at 1.5% pace last quarter. That was more than previously estimated. State and local outlays decreased 2.2%. Inventory shrank. 12.4 billion in the second quarter, subtracting 1.26 percentage points from the GDP. And that's the most in more than 2 years. Let's see if there's any other interesting. That was probably about it. So, again, you know, I think it's all about the election also. I think they're going, whatever decisions they're going to make, it's going to be based on making Donald Trump less electable. I do believe that that's their objective at this point in time. It might be different after the election. They might go back to, you know, employment, inflation, GDP, and so forth. You know, what's going on? You know, maybe the economies of the world really actually play a market. But I think up until the election, I think whatever they decide to do is going to be all based on trying to get Donald Trump not elected.
I wonder about that. I think the Federal Reserve has got to be looking at this from the perspective. They're not very popular right now. A lot of people think they have no power to speak of. They're just hanging around and pretending to be powerful when they don't have any. They have no real. A lot of people suspect there's nothing they can do, and therefore, who needs them? There are people who are thinking maybe they need to go and be dissolved, and that sentiment would only grow if they were to precipitate another serious decline in the stock markets. Right? If they do something, I suspect they're not just thinking, what will it do to the economy? I suspect they're also thinking, what will it do to us? Meaning, the people at the Federal Reserve.
I don't think they really care.
Well, I think it's I don't think it's a serious concern, but I think it's there in the back of their minds. I think they're saying, you know, we got to be careful here. We're going to get these people so angry, they're going to come burn the building down. So I think they're inhibited. I don't mean it's going to stop anything. I'm just saying they're inhibited. They're anxious, and it would be abnormal if they weren't. They're in a difficult situation. A lot of people are depending on them to do something, and whatever they do it right. And I'm not sure that they can, and I think they know that.
I do believe they're between a rock and a hard place. I mean, if you take away elections and you take away, you know, they are between a rock and a hard place, you know. And but they can still, I do believe they can still create more stimulus somehow in different manners. You know, you can call it whatever you want, whether it's quantitative easing, whether it's, you know, stimulus in one direction, whether it's, you know, buying up bonds or whatever. They can still do, you know, some things. But I do believe with this election.
Can they do anything that's effective?
No, I mean, we're past.
I mean, they can do something. I get that.
We're past the point of doing something effective. All they're doing now is managing and keeping status quo, I believe, because this is, it's just too big. I mean, it's, you know, but with this election, they will do everything in their power to get Hillary elected and Donald Trump not elected. So I think a lot of the decisions that you see, the reports, the lies, they're going to do what they do with each election, you know, particularly the Democrats. You know, they're going to try to keep everything all rosy, all calm.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't foresee a rate increase before the election.
I don't think
she's going to do it in December, and, you know, where everybody is sidetracked with the holidays, and usually with an economy and everything, you know, you do have a little bit more spending going on and so forth. So, and particularly after the election, if, who knows? I mean, if hopefully Donald Trump is elected, if he is elected, all kinds of things are going to be happening. It's going to be interesting. So
it'll be plenty interesting, but I think you're right about this. I think they'll wait until after the election.
They will.
Right?
Until December.
Because they're not going to claim, if they do anything in September, they're going to say, oh, my God, you did that intentionally to throw the election to Clinton or throw the election to Trump. They're going to get a lot of criticism. I think they have to wait till after the election. But when they do, then we're going to see some changes. And we're going to see, perhaps a little more reality in our economy than we've seen lately.
There's only one thing that I could see that would make her want to increase rates, and that's at the end of the month when the IMF begins to trade, when China is finally welcomed into the SDR, and if there is too much, I don't foresee pressure on the dollar immediately. You might get some. Will the she increase? If there was too much pressure on the dollar, she could increase the rates in order to stabilize the dollar. That's the that's the only way I would see something before the election. And
well,
I really don't foresee with the IMF activating China's currency into the basket that you're going to see anything significant. I mean,
let me ask you this.
What's that?
Do you foresee us breaking for a commercial?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Okay.
I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
You always have an interview.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and the program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
You know, we've had stronger oil prices, and you know when the oil prices were dropping, everyone was talking about the debt defaults in the energy sector, and you know, and how bad it was, and so forth. And then once you had the stronger oil prices, people don't pay as much attention to these debt defaults in this sector, but they are continuing. Both in the oil, gas, natural resource companies, they accounted for 56% of this year's corporate defaults, as 65 companies have missed their payments on their debt. This report actually came out yesterday from the S&P Global. The oil and gas sector also has the largest share of high-yield bonds trading at distressed levels at 31%. So trouble in this oil sector, it's also translating into higher global corporate defaults. This year's tally totals 117 companies, up 60% from the same period of 2015. Global corporate defaults are currently at the highest level since 2009, when 213 companies defaulted in the same period amid the global financial crisis. So, again, higher oil prices, but we're still seeing a lot of problems with these with the credit defaults in this sector. And there was one more thing I wanted to say about this, and it's not going to go away. One of the weakest links are the companies the S&P rated B minus or lower, with either a negative rating outlook or ratings on credit watch with negative implications. That has hit a historical high of 245 in June. Oil and gas companies account for the largest share of this category at 59 companies. So, you know, again, you know, it's another area that's, you know, no one pays much attention to. Go ahead.
Part of the reason for this, there's an article here from Investopedia, and the headline is El Arian. He's the author or is the speaker of this quoted in the article. Low interest rates lead to excessive risk taking. And the idea behind this article in part supports the problem that we're seeing in the petroleum industry and people that are defaulting on their loans. They were, you know, petroleum is industry lending money to wildcatters and whatever, and to drill new oil wells has always been a risky business. But what El Arian is pointing out is he said the Fed cut the benchmark, well, the article says, the Fed cut the benchmark interest rates to nearly zero in 2008 and has only raised it on one occasion since then. Fed is currently struggling to decide when it should raise rates again after leaving them unchanged in all five of their previous meetings this year. Mohamed El Arian, the chief economic advisor for Alliance, warns that the continued policy of low interest rates could distort financial markets by depriving conservative savers of a proper yield on their money and causing more adventurous investors to take on more risk. Well, here's where I think more adventurous investors have invested in the petroleum industry, which is known to be risky, and they've said, let's do it because I think we can make some big money on that, and it may be that it's not working out. And part of the problem, part of the magnitude of the problem we're seeing in corporations defaulting on their bonds and unable, apparently bankrupt. But if they can't pay their debts, they are technically bankrupt at least. They wouldn't have been so deep in debt if the Federal Reserve hadn't held interest rates so low that people can't make a decent income off bonds. And they have looked for a different source, different place to park their money in hopes of generating a fat income. And it may be that now they're going to regret their decision to invest in petroleum industry. But El Arian thinks the Federal Reserve should not overlook the costs that come with their policy of maintaining historically low interest rates. He said there's also the risk of financial instability down the road, meaning into the future, because of extraordinary monetary policy. And that, I think, is the strongest argument for trying to slowly normalize rates, because otherwise you contribute to excessive risk-taking. That's his concern, and the petroleum industry would seem to be one of the beneficiaries of this extraordinary risk-taking, excessive risk-taking. And what happens? You know, we can sit back and say, well, all right, somebody took a gamble on this thing, and they took a flyer on some petroleum industry stocks, and no big deal. Better them than me. But the truth is that currency is going to be, whatever they invested is going to disappear. It's going to be destroyed. that's going to be removed, effectively removed from the economy, and the consequences of that bankruptcy are going to be perhaps more adverse than what we're than what people are expecting, at least at the moment. So anyway, the point is low interest rates force people to take more risk. They go into junk bonds because the prime bonds, you can't get a good return on them.
So. Yep, low, and that's part of why we're seeing the consumer, you know, buy cars and going out. They're spending more because they get these low rates. Once mm-hmm. once that begins to turn around, hey, economy is going to come to a screeching halt, and again, there's no incentives to save. You know, so now they're spending. They haven't saved. They're not going to have anything to fall back on. They already have a problem. If they can't afford, you hear anything from $400 to $500 to $1,000 emergency. They can't. They have nothing there. So, and I look for good signs. I try to find something that I can't dissect and come and equals a good outcome. And there's just no. As long as we have a fiat currency, we're going to have your purchasing power is going to lose its value. It doesn't matter how many of those dollars you keep. It doesn't matter where you have it invested. It doesn't matter how many gains it shows that you have on your quarterly statements. You are losing because of our fiat currency. It's losing value and your purchasing power declines. And in my mind, in what I believe and what has been proven over thousands and thousands of years, gold is there to preserve your purchasing power, period. So gold and silver, folks, we're going to wake up one day to a different world. You know, these are your signs. These are your 2x4s floating in the air, the leaves and the breeze. These are your wake-up calls to get prepared, to get positioned. And if you get positioned today, and if it doesn't happen until next year, what have you lost? Nothing. You've gained. So again, don't sit on that fence waiting for it to hit you, waiting for that 2x4 to hit you in the head. You know, get it done, and that way you can sit back, because we're all going to be affected. Even though we're protected with our gold, our finances, our purchasing power, we will be affected one way or another. So there was another thing, consumer sentiment, that posted its third straight monthly decline today. They're worried about the economy a little bit. It didn't drop that much. But when you have an economy that is supported by, you know, when it's consumerism driven, sentiment means a lot. You know, or they're going to stop buying and everything falls apart. Consumer sentiment fell to its lowest level since April. This is from the University of Michigan. Its consumer sentiment index fell to 89.8, down from a reading of 90 in July, and 2.3% lower than in August of 2015. August's final reading was also short of the 90.8 that was expected. So consumers, especially in younger households, said that their personal financial prospects were less favorable. Younger households cited smaller expected income gains and higher expenses. So they're not as optimistic as the Federal Reserve is. So,
I'd like to see what the consumer sentiment was in the former Soviet Union in the year or two before it collapsed. And I'm going to bet you that, I don't know, but I'm going to bet you, I mean, they were scrambling, they were hustling, but no one really, very few people actually thought it would collapse. Nobody thought it was going to just disappear. And yet that's what happened. And it would be interesting to find out what the public sentiment was in Russia at that time. Did people say, well, were they still optimistic and thinking positively about the Soviet Union? Or how many of them understood that, look, we're on the brink of a collapse? Because if we could look at that, we had those numbers. Maybe I can dig them up one of these days, assuming they even exist. But if we had those numbers, they would be instructive. Sort of thing where you could sit back and you might be able to climb here and said, well, you know, 6 months before the Soviet Union blew up, public sentiment was still positive. They were optimistic. They thought things were going to work out.
Well, I mean, that's what we have. We have a bubble. And when we have a bubble, yeah, every time a bubble is created, you know, you have, you know, a wild party going on. You know, things are great.
Yeah,
and then
for
that's
a while.
The problem. And that's the problem. Yeah. Because the next day you wake up and it's a whole different world. The party is over. You know, the music stopped playing. And it's time to go home. And
if you still own a home.
If you still own a home.
Mm-hmm. Time to go to somebody's home, if not your own.
Move over, you know, Mom and Dad.
Maybe the old people's home. I don't
Grandma
know.
Grandma and Grandpa.
There's got to be a home around here somewhere, or at least an empty cardboard box. There must be something.
This report also talked about these. I'm still on the consumer sentiment, that the consumers were suffering from the summertime blues.
Oh, no. There ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
But they said that the consumer spending had picked up after a slow start to the year, which is totally different than, you know, what we've been talking about. But
that's part of the problem. You know, if we could just count on getting straight answers out of these people, even if they were not necessarily positive, we could actually have a lot more confidence in this. If they came back and they said, look, here's what the real unemployment rate is. Right. And it's not 5%, it's 12%. Okay, tell us the truth. We can work with it. You know, we see these movies, you can't handle the truth. Yeah, I think we can. I think there are circumstances where the President of the United States could take to the podium and say, essentially, my fellow Americans, here's the skinny. All right? Now, I'm going to tell you some truth, and it's not going to be pleasant, but I don't want you to panic. Don't do something stupid, because if you do, you're the ones that are going to pay for it. Right? Go out and sell something or buy something all of a sudden. Here's the truth of the matter. Now let's try to deal with this like adults. Right? And work our way through it. They don't think we are adults. I think maybe we're adults. Ignorant adults, but adults nonetheless. And I think it's possible. And even if we're so stupid that we panic, somewhere along the line, I think we have to run that risk. We got to say, all right, they want to panic, let them panic, and to heck with them. But we're going to tell the truth. And when we get done of all the, get rid of all the idiots who are inclined to panic, by the time we'll whittle this thing down where the only people left are the ones who can keep their heads screwed on straight. I'd like to get the truth. I'd like to be able to believe I was getting the truth out of the government. And I don't. I don't have any confidence in that at all. And I can't imagine that any of you do either. So how are you going to run this country if we don't know what's going on? You know, you're going to drive down the road and the speedometer doesn't work. How can you tell if you're going too fast or too slow? You're going to get tickets. Somebody's got to start telling the truth, and it does not appear that the government is likely to do that on their own, but I'd like to see it. But do you have anything else, Melody?
No, I don't.
Well, we got one little article
here.
Well,
I do, but go ahead.
And we got 2 minutes until the break. Actually, about a minute and a half, Melody. But I'll get started on this anyway. Tom Fitton is the president of Judicial Watch, and the headline from Breitbart is Clinton Foundation will shut down by the end of the week. The president of Judicial Watch Tuesday told syndicated radio show host Howie Carr that the Clinton Foundation will cease operation after the Washington-based watchdog released 725 pages of emails revealing the pay-to-play culture of Secretary Hillary R. Clinton's State Department. I don't think the Clinton Foundation is going to survive until the end of the week, said Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch. If you really think, do you really think that, Tom? This is the radio host. Do you really think that they can be shamed in any way, shape, or form? And Fitton, he said the Associated Press had discovered that out of 154 non-governmental people Clinton met with as America's top diplomat, 85 of that 154, over half, were donors to the Clinton Foundation or another Clinton-affiliated organization with combined contributions exceeding $156 million. Of the 85, more than 40 gave at least $100,000, and another 20 gave $1 million. They're the people who got to see Hillary, and I don't think it was to bet on what's happening in the Super Bowl. Let's take a break for a couple more commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment, and we will conclude this article from Breitbart about the Clinton Foundation. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We're talking about an article from Breitbart and the headline, and they were quoting the president of the Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton, as saying Clinton Foundation will shut down by the end of the week. Now, I don't believe it's going to shut down by the end of the week. Right? They're not talking about the end of next week. They're talking about the end of this week. I don't think it's going to happen like that. But just the same, this is interesting. He says, I don't think the Clinton Foundation is going to survive until the end of the week. The radio host said, do you really think they can be shamed in any way, shape, or form? Meaning he didn't, the radio host didn't believe that the Clinton Foundation would shut their doors just because they got caught engaging in a little ordinary theft, graft, extortion, or maybe even treason. He doesn't think they can be shamed, and I'm inclined to agree with that. But this is based on a study by the Associated Press that discovered out of 153 non-governmental people that Clinton met with as America's top diplomat, 85 were donors to the Clinton Foundation or another Clinton-affiliated organization with combined contributions exceeding $156 million. I don't know what they're doing here. Well, that translates into about $2 million contribution on average. Right? That's quite a lot. More than 40 gave at least $100,000. And another 20 gave $1 million, according to this report. Fitton said the shuttering operation has already begun. Clinton Foundation no longer accepts contributions from foreigners and corporations, and they have canceled the annual Clinton Global Initiative. Foreign contributions make up 40% of the foundation's revenue. That's interesting to me, because by foreign contributions, we are almost certainly talking about the Clintons taking money to betray the best interests of the United States of America and to serve foreign interests. I don't know what happened in any of these instances, but it certainly sounds like treason is possible in some of them. If they're working for the best, if they're taking money to do what somebody wants in a foreign country, rather than they are presumably doing that to betray American interests, seems to me like we're getting very close to the concept of treason.
Now, the ones who have betrayed this country is the FBI, are the ones who investigates this and says there is no wrong. I mean,
yeah,
how
I
deep
understand.
Do they investigate it? They all take money one way or another. They're all part of, you know. And I get, yes, she's running and she's the candidate for the president. I get all that. And I know her history and his history. And, yeah, I'll, you know, you could pretty much guarantee there was, you know, they weren't just out having, you know, tea and crumpets. I get that. But still, the ones that really should be held accountable are the people that have investigated and just let this go on.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point of Obama and his $400 million to Iran for the hostages. It just doesn't matter anymore. Nothing matters anymore.
Yeah. All they think, they'll go after poor people and middle-class people, then they're not going after well-connected government employees, officers, whatever. And it's not a new phenomenon. You know, there have been studies and reports on the Clintons that they should have been jailed a decade or two ago. And they always managed to beat the rap. They've always managed to smile
hey,
and
Bill
grin.
Bill Clinton
and
was impeached. Okay?
Oh, I know he was impeached.
But did they have the belly to throw him out? No,
they didn't. Then why do you suppose that was? Because the people in the Senate and in the Congress are just as dirty as the people in the White House. And if you fully impeach the president and discover all the little shenanigans he's up to, you probably can't uncover that evidence without also uncovering trails that lead to congressmen and senators. And so it would be best probably in their interest to say, let's not, oh, Bill's a nice guy. We'll play around with the impeachment process and we'll let him go. But my point is this. We've been letting crooks in government go for at least a generation in this country, and it has resulted because we refused or we were unwilling, unable, whatever, to prosecute the gangsters and the thugs who moved into the government. They have now become open about being gangsters and thugs. It didn't just start just lately. This has been going on who knows how many decades. But they should have been, people who pulled these kinds of stunts, they should have been tried for treason 20, 30 years ago. Hanged right outside the Capitol building. All right, make every congressman and senator walk by the gibbet where they've got their former colleague, good old Bunky. And when they see him hanging there, maybe I'm not going to be a crook anymore.
That's not happening now.
Well, it should happen.
You know, no, I mean, they do need to be held accountable. And, you know, it's the people, the departments that don't fully complete their investigations. I can remember Kenneth Starr. We could never really figure out, you know, why he would drag his, feet in some of his investigations and so forth. But, I mean, and look what they did to poor old Nixon. I mean, all he did was make a recording.
Yeah, I know.
And look what happened to Nixon. But, hey, you know, and it's the people's problem, too, because look how many people we try and talk to, and yet they refuse to even listen to the possibilities of what is or what has happened and in the direction that we're heading in. And they just, they're just picking on Hillary. It's just emails, okay? What's the big deal? It's like, really? Are you kidding me? I mean, this is, she's running for president of the United States.
Yeah.
You need to have just a little more common sense.
A little more.
Just a little
a
more.
A sense of shame.
You know,
there are some things that, you know, it just should say, look, yes, yes.
I mean,
you got
she could have come out.
I'm not going to run for president. It is not acceptable. It's undignified for me to run for president because you have pictures of me with whatever. And she's some people still should have a sense of that. They don't. She's out to get what she can get, and she doesn't care whether anybody likes it or they don't like it. But there's a point to this. Given the heat that the Clinton Foundation has attracted, I doubt that anyone is likely to want to bribe them again. All of the bribes, contributions that will be from now on, they're all going to be exposed and investigated. If the Clintons can no longer deliver quid pro quo services in return for bribes, who needs them? If the Clinton Foundation's normal customers can no longer safely and secretly bribe the Clintons to betray this country, they won't give Clintons any more bribes. If the Clinton Foundation can't attract any more bribes, they might as well shut the doors. All right? And there's the problem. It's not just a question of how many people are going to keep going to Clinton to Bribes R Us, the Clinton Bribes R Us Foundation, if they can't expect to keep the bribes quiet. I wonder how much money Hillary's candidacy has cost the Clintons. She stuck her head up. She attracted attention as if she was John Gotti, the Teflon Don, who used to run much of organized crime in New York City. But Gotti attracted too much attention. He thought he could get away with anything, and he finally got caught. By attracting the attention, Gotti wound up in prison where he eventually died from throat cancer. I think a similar story is roughly true for Hillary. She's a crook. She and Bill acquired millions of dollars through their criminal enterprise, but Hillary has the big ego. Hillary was determined to show the world how smart, powerful, and invulnerable she was. She was going to be her own set of laws, play by her own set of rules, and become president of the United States. She insisted on showing off. She insisted on attracting exorbitant measures of public attention. Well, now, all that attention may have backfired and caused the destruction of her criminal enterprise, that is to say, the Clinton Foundation, and maybe her financial ambitions, and may yet even push her into prison. So I'm just looking at this from the perspective of she's running a criminal enterprise. John Gotti ran a criminal enterprise, and he couldn't keep his head down. All right, the old-time mafia figures told him, look, shut up, stop dressing like you're coming out of GQ magazine. Keep a low profile. But no, he couldn't do that. And then we wound up dying in prison. Hillary couldn't keep a low profile. She's lost that foundation. I have no idea how much money they made in the Clinton Foundation, but I'm sure they've grossed hundreds of millions. I don't know how much they've been able to keep. This has got to be something. I would bet that Bill Clinton from the beginning has tried to discourage Hillary from running for president. He probably figures he's too weak to fight with her anymore, but just the same, I would bet that he's been wary, anxious, concerned. If Hillary runs for president, it will attract so much attention to what the Clintons have been doing that they may have to cease and desist, and they may even wind up prosecuted before this is all over. So, I don't know. You know, if you're going to be a crook, put on a mask and a hoodie and whatever else it is where you can't easily be identified. Hillary has been too obvious, and I think she's going to pay a price for it.
I just wanted to talk before the end of the program. Puerto Rico's pensions, $2 billion in assets, but they have $45 billion in liabilities. So they're going to soon name an oversight board that's going to have the task of balancing the island's huge pension deficit and its $70 billion debt load. And again, this is just another situation. And Puerto Rico has pretty much said, hey, we're not paying it. Because that's in their constitution. The White House is set to name as soon as next week the members of that oversight board. They're going to be drawn from a list of candidates that have been submitted by congressional leaders in both parties. Actually, I take it back. Puerto Rico's constitution calls for the island to pay its general obligation bonds ahead of public services or pension, so I was right. But a law that was signed by Obama in June kind of clouds. And he has, by directing this new board, it's to ensure that these pensions are adequately funded. So guess where those funds are going to come from? So Puerto Rico's saying...
Hot off the press, Melody.
Yeah, from
nothing
the
I like better than the smell of fresh money.
You know, from the taxpayers. So, and again, and it's not something that's just limited to Puerto Rico. We have how many states are in the same situation where their liabilities certainly outpace their assets. They have pensions that are all underfunded, and it's going to the chicken's going to come home to roost, and there's not going to be any money there to pay. And if you're involved in part of those pensions and so forth, guess what happens to your retirement? So get it protected, folks. Get it insured. And take control of it.
Take responsibility. Here's an article from the Daily Caller on George Soros. Said leaked Soros strategy. Globalization will increase migration pressures. George Soros' Open Society Foundation, and I object to that. As soon as I hear open society, I'm not interested in an open society. There are people on this planet who are... They have a different system of values that are absolutely, they are medieval.
Well, that's right? What George
Soros
said.
And you can't just bring these people in here and say, oh, they'll be assimilated. No, they won't. They're not going to be assimilated. All right? They come in with a different set of values, and they're going to hang on to an alternative set of values, and they will not be productive contributors. They will be parasites. But Soros Open Society, and part of the reason for closed society, and I don't mean closed absolutely, but I mean you've got to have borders and you've got to have rules on this sort of thing. You can't let any idiot into your country just because he's hungry and he wants a place to go. The people that should be coming in here are people that have the cultural values that are necessary to be productive. If the only values they've got are the values that are necessary to be hungry, give me something to eat, you got anything? Got a free lunch for me, huh? Got some welfare? Got some whatever? They don't need these people. And I don't think you can afford them. And I don't think you can afford to be nice in a world where that's overrun by people who don't have a culture that's able to support them. If they don't have those cultural values, if they don't know them, understand them, respect them, what are they going to do here? Now, some people would hope that they will adopt once they get here, and in some cases, that's probably true. But in others, and the Muslims are the classic example of this, their philosophy, their theology is such that they can't accept some of the things that are necessary to become prosperous. And on the other hand, they have no objection to taking handouts. I can't see it. I would keep strong borders. I'm not interested in bringing a lot of immigrants in here. I don't have an objection to all of them immigrants. That's not what I'm saying. But if you don't have that system of values, you shouldn't be here. George Soros had an open society foundation, and the implication is he's saying, oh, let just anybody come in. It doesn't matter. We're just going to have a big old party. You let these people in, you're going to have a trouble getting them out. I guarantee it's a lot easier to keep them out than it is to get them out once they've been here. Where are we, Melody? We only have 30 seconds left, so we won't get any further into George Soros. But he understood, according to this email, that globalization would increase the migration pressure for people in poor countries to move to more prosperous countries, meaning Europe and the United States and perhaps Australia and a handful of other places.
Well, he's
can't
about
do that. You got to protect what you've got, folks.
He's about a couple of decades too late. In his assessment, we've had globalization for a while, and we've had we've had these pressures. We're just coming
we
to the completion
too, Melody,
of the globalization. For the special that we've been running all week. Give us a call, folks. 1-800-375-4188, half-ounce American Gold Eagle, and 90% $20 face value of silver coins dated prior to 1964. There you go, Al.
Okay, we'll be back on Monday. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.